Welcome to this special edition of STP Radio, the STP Con Spring 2015 Keynote Series. Today, Agile consultant, coach, and trainer Bob Galen delivers the first keynote address of STP Con, the Three Pillars Approach to Agile Testing Strategy, recorded on April 1st, 2015.
So, our keynote speaker, Bob Galen. He is an agile methodologist from Cary, North Carolina. Anyone here from North Carolina other than me and Bob? Okay. That's right, baby. He doesn't live far from me, but we only see each other at the conferences. He guides teams to adoption to shift Scrum and other agile methodologies and practices. He is a principal and agile evangelist with Velocity Partners, and he's a certified Scrum coach, a certified Scrum product owner, and he has some books that you should be buying if you don't have them already. Scrum Product Ownership, Agile Reflections, and a book called Three Pillars of Agile Quality and Testing, which if you look in your conference bag, he has given everybody here a free one. So a big hand to Bob, and let's welcome Bob Galen to the show.
Morning, everyone. So this is a privilege to be here. I want to thank STP. I think it was 2013 that they invited me to do a panel keynote with Rex Black. Is Rex here? Rex is here. Maybe somewhere. And Kem Kaner. Do you remember? It was 2013, and it was a real privilege. It was like I was a little guy amongst these sort of giants. I mean, Rex has a phenomenal resume, and Kem has a phenomenal resume, and I was sort of the comic relief in between them, I think. But it was a real privilege, and this year it was just even more of a privilege to be invited back. So I want to thank the STP folks for having me. The three pillars approach to your agile testing strategy. What's tough out there? I know it's hard in a keynote to get interaction, but I want to try to create some. What are some of the challenges in agile testing? Anyone that you've seen? Some of the things that are hard out there, the hard bits. Because that's, I think, what the three pillars is trying to not solve, but to try to help with. Anyone? Oh, no, it's too early. No one has. Is agile testing easy? Yes.
It can be too fast.
It can be too fast. Who said that? Raise your hands. Oh, it's too fast. Okay. Anyone? Other challenges for agile testing? Yes. Knowing what to say, how to say it, when to say it. I like that. That's an interesting comment. Sir?
I think a two-tiered reality where your developers are agile and your testing team is, well.
Well, so there's multi-tiered realities. It can go in different directions. It could be, testers are more agile, developers aren't. Developers are more agile, testers are whatever that means. It could be the organization is lagging behind, et cetera. So there's lagging stuff. That can be a challenge. Sir? Constantly changing those pesky requirements, constantly changing them, or sort of emerging. We agilists have this term that things emerge. Everyone, have you ever heard that? There's emergent architectures and emergent requirements. That just says it's, strap yourself into your chair because things are going to change pretty frequently. I saw someone in the back. Tough things about agile. Just shout it out.
Agile and name only.
I did a workshop yesterday and we were talking about transitioning from waterfall to agile and what I think of as poor agile. Or just doing it tactically was coming up, and what does good look like, and not really adhering to some of the core principles. So you're not getting the value. So that's a common anti-pattern from my point of view. Anyone else? Some of the challenges out there. What are some of the good things? Anyone? Success stories from Agile. What do you like? What has delighted you? There's some people out there that had experience. Someone yesterday was talking about exploratory testing, and it really sounded exciting. Sir, someone back there, I saw a hand. Yeah. So balancing it, I'm going to talk in the pillars about a whole team view where it's not just the testers. I don't think that was the right model even in waterfall. It's a whole team or organizational view, but we never had that view. And Agile tries to foster that view to the degree that the organization accepts that. So that, to me, would be a good Agile practice. Anything else there where Agile's doing well? Yes, sir.
Great testing and quality-focused tools.
So testing, quality focus tools, collaborative tools. It's not just core tools. I'm putting words in your mouth, but it's like the tool suite is sort of open source is coming to bear there. So that creates some interesting dynamics sometimes. Is that all the success stories we have? Is still yes. So it's real time. I talk very often when I'm coaching agile teams. I don't want to communicate via defects. I don't want to communicate via email. I want to communicate to the degree that we can. I want to communicate in real time. I want to have this sense of urgency that every day is incredibly special from an agile team perspective for collaboration. So please talk amongst yourselves wherever possible. Please interact. Please collaborate. Please pair if you can. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Anything else? Agile success stories. So it's trying, right? Agile done relatively well. It's trying to get this realistic alignment. I think about a capacity alignment with the organization. It's hard to get that in a lot of organizations, but it's at least taking steps in that. You know, it's moving away from death march. I'm old enough to remember Jordan, and he wrote about death marches and things. I think Agile's trying to get away from that. It doesn't eliminate it, but it's trying to move away from that notion of a death march. Anything else? One more. What rut? So equal membership. I always wanted that. I'm a developer. I started leading test teams. Not that long ago, I even wanted to. I tried to pay equal. So I tried to put my money where my mouth was. It was hard to do, but I was trying to equalize everything. So in word, in deed, in discussions, in organizational density, everything. And I think Agile is trying to lead in that direction. It's not a panacea. It's not a silver bullet. But it's setting that tone up of we're a team and equality at a team level. And I don't remember waterfall sort of, it didn't prevent that, but I don't think it fostered that so much. So the pillars, I want to jump into the pillars. The genesis of the pillars, I've seen way too many teams who are just testing in agile organizations without a map or a plan for improvement. Very often in my coaching or in my experience, the organization, the agile transformation and the agile strategy is driven from technology. It's driven from development from a top-down perspective, perhaps a CTO. Or, you know, C-level folks are driving it, but then the development organization or the technology organization is setting the tone, is paying the budget. And the QA group and the testing group is sort of along for the ride, if that makes sense. So they're sort of like on the horse. But they're being dragged along. They're not really a central partner in the strategy. I mean, and I know that we're trying to get into partnerships and things and equality, but it's not really a central, we're not a central player in it. And that's a developer centricness or that technology centricness. And there's a lot of seatbelts, so it's a little bit chaotic. And I don't think it feels like a partnership from a QA testing organization perspective. And it's really not a partnership. And I when I've seen the partnership enacted, you get better results. And when I've seen the partnership ignored, you get lesser results. So one of the motivations for the three pillars is to try to get this partnership enacted. And then the focus on the other thing I've noticed, and you probably have seen this, that there's an incredible focus on testing, but not so much of a focus on quality. Has everyone? So it's almost like testing is synonymous to quality. And the XP practices focus on quality. So for example, pairing and TDD to me are some quality-centric practices. Product owners are starting to think about building the right thing and investing in that. But there's not that tremendous focus on quality equal to testing. And I want to get that. We wanted to get that in the pillars, that we're not just testing in quality. We're testing as an activity, but as a whole team activity, but we're building in quality as well. So that's another part of the genesis. Another thing, one of the things that really drove our thinking and my thinking around the three pillars was one particular company. And I'll describe it, I'll tell a story, I'll embellish it a little bit. Not too much, but it's a real story. It's a sad tale. I was visiting this, it's probably in the upper five financial companies in the world. And they have a development office in Cary in North Carolina. And as a coach, they invited me in just to sort of look around at their practices. They liken themselves to being quite mature. They had been practicing Scrum XP practices for a few years. And they'd been working really hard. They had brought in, they had deep pockets. So they brought in a lot of leading coaches and consultants to teach them things. things like Cucumber and TDD, and they were getting tremendous traction. The organization, from a development test perspective, was maybe 1,000 people. So it was from their point of view, it was just a satellite development arm where they were playing around building new products, but also trying new methodologies and seeing how that developed. So I was really, as a coach, it was like a playground. It was a sandbox. I was really excited. So I went in and I started, you know, walking around. And if anyone's familiar, how many people are familiar with Cucumber? So they were building a lot of Cucumber tests. And they were very advanced in continuous integration and continuous deployment. And they also invested a lot in information radiators. So they had lava lamps and they had red lights and green lights. They even had robotic things that would shoot people if they broke the build, like little Nerf, not shoot them with bullets, but Nerf weapons. It would triangulate on, if you broke the build, it would know where you were sitting, and if it could, it would hit you with a Nerf dart in the head to remind you that you had to fix the build. So it was an incredibly, from my point of view, it was a very cool, technology-driven, middle-tier automation environment. And I toured it for about a day, walking from team to team to team. And the maturity was just seeping out of the organization. And I was looking for it. I was there for a few weeks, invited for a few weeks, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be an incredibly mature organization. So I came back the next day, saw some of the same things. They had counters for the Cucumber test. Does that make sense to everyone? So they were, every time someone would check something in, you would see increasing coverage, increasing tests. You would say they had goals for the thing, numeric goals. It was wonderful. So you could almost literally, like if I stood and looked at an information radiator, I could see increasing coverage in the span of 15 minutes or something across the center. So there was this innate sense of, wow, we're making progress. We're providing coverage, et cetera. So that's the good news. But then I was invited to a grooming session. Everyone know what I mean by grooming? Backlog refinement, backlog grooming. And I was invited to this session. And again, I was very excited about that. I'm like, crap, if these guys can do Cucumber so well, stories are going to be like flowing off their tongues. Acceptance criteria is going to be magically appearing on whiteboards. It's going to be this like sort of this biblical experience of story writing. And what I found is they couldn't write a story to save their life at all. I'm just sitting there. So I'm not trying to judge. I'm not trying to say it's good or bad. I wanted to have this biblical experience. And they couldn't, they literally couldn't write a story. And it was just this one team, but it was apparently, it was most of the folks in the center really didn't understand their story writing. And I had this aha moment that I thought something was wrong. Does anyone know what my concern would be? Anyone in the audience? So I'm having Cucumber fests on the one side, and I'm having a lack of being able to articulate a user's story on the other side. What's wrong with that? Anyone? What? Flawed test basis. Anyone else? He's right. Yes.
They don't know what the customer values.
They don't know what they're not engaging. So one concern I had, sort of the negative epiphany of like, holy crap, there was no value connection, if that makes sense, from a customer value perspective, from a story value perspective. Why are we building what we're building? From my point of view, I had this question of, well, like, where were the acceptance tests coming from? Does everyone resonate with that? Where were they literally coming from? And what was happening is they were just using Cucumber as a functional test vehicle. Their metrics were driving them just to write tests. They were lacking the connection to customer. They were lacking the connection to value. They were lacking the connection to conversation. Does that make sense to everyone? They were missing the most important part of a user story. Please write this down if you don't get that, is to have a conversation around the story. That's the most important part of the acceptance test or the acceptance criteria for a user story. It's not to encode it in given when then language or to encode it programmatically in Cucumber. That's gravy from my point of view. It's the conversation around the story, the front of the story and the back of the story. If you're familiar with the three C's, it's card, confirmation, and conversation. Conversation is the most important part of that. So they were absolutely missing that. And I was absolutely aghast. I'm like, oh. And again, it wasn't terrible, but the imbalance of the organization struck me in the face. I was like, this is an organization who's really struggling. They're very advanced in some areas of Agile, and they're very inadvanced. They're very novice-like or even incredibly inexperienced in some areas. And I was saying to myself, you know what, they need to balance out the practices. What they're struggling with is they don't realize that the things are connected. That story writing is connected to to cucumber tests. It's connected to the automation that you have, in order to be an effective agile organization, we need cross-cutting concerns. So I came up with this notion of a blank screen. There we go. It may be the distance. I'll blame it on the distance. I don't know. So the three pillars of agile quality and testing, and what I wanted to explain to them, and they were in what I would call pillar one, the development and test automation pillar, which is areas like a pyramid-based strategy for unit and cucumber and selenium tests. So having that agile test automation pyramid, and you're using that for your strategy is an activity in there. And they were heavily invested in continuous integration, and they were using information radiators or dashboards, et cetera. So they were incredibly focused on the development and test, or what I would call the technology-centered or the programming-centered pillar. And then they were very weak on what I would call the software testing and the cross-functional team practice. In particular, they were really falling behind with user stories and having conversations from a user story perspective. So I thought, how do I help this organization? How do we help them? And I've seen a similar pattern across a lot of organizations. So I started thinking, how do we communicate testing practices and quality practices from an agile point of view? How do we communicate balance? How do we communicate foundations? How could we assess what's maturity in this pillar, but how do we connect it to other places? So you're having a balanced strategy and a balanced evolution and a balanced transformation. And that's the genesis of this. So there's a technology-centered pillar, and we'll explore each one. We'll drill into each one of these one at a time. So there's the technology-centric one. This is where ATDD, if anyone is familiar with the DDs, TDD, BDD, ATDD, I feel like I'm stuttering sometimes. It's all the DDs. The DDs are in there. Tools are in there. Practices, technology practices are in there. Automation is in there. Even things like your ALM tools are in there. If you're using Rally, or if you're using version 1, or Jira, I would throw those things in there as well. That's that technology tool-centric pillar. The middle pillar is what I would call generic software testing practices. One of the things I saw with this client, with this customer, with this firm, is that they were throwing things out. When they were going agile, they stopped doing some things entirely, like test planning. And some major chunks of documentation. Anyone seen that in your travels where we're going agile and we throw we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So we're going agile and there are these traditional testing activities that we've gotten tremendous traction from over the years. Now maybe we have to lean them when we go agile, but a lot of organizations, they simply stop doing it entirely. They ignore it. So the middle pillar. Are those testing practices. I would put risk-based testing in there as a technique, as a technology, as a strategy. I put exploratory testing in there. I actually, as we'll explore it later, I talk about planning. I think having some lightweight test planning can be very useful in agile contexts. So that's that traditional practices. Please don't throw them away. Please morph them and make them usable from an agile point of view. The third pillar is cross-functional team practices. If I was to liken it in another way, I would call it the soft stuff. Does everyone resonate? So agile to me is very soft-oriented. It's very communication-oriented, very collaborative. It's trying. The value proposition in agile, one of the key value propositions, I'm looking at it right now. If you all move to agile teams, instead of maybe the intellectual property being in the tools or in the automation or in the plans or in the documentation, any good agile coach is going to put the monkey on your back and to say, my critical success factor is you. Everyone with me? Are you ready for that? Are you ready for that? That burden is, no, I'm not ready for that. No, it's you. I'm actually saying you. You are a human being. The greatest tool we have is between our ears. And I'm trying to activate that tool in teaming combinations. So the cross-functional team practices is that. So one of the activities there is pairing, what I would call very strongly opportunistic pairing, where we're forcing ourselves. We're not working in a vacuum. We actually, as an agile team, we understand that working together can be more effective and can be more efficient, and we can produce more stuff than just simply typing, throwing myself in an office, closing the door, and working only by myself. is I, to the degree that I can collaborate. So that's the three pillars. Then there's some foundational things underneath that, what I would call whole team ownership of quality. The gentleman here, I think, brought that up. We're all on equal terms. And it's not just saying it. Every Agile team on the planet Earth says, oh, we all own quality. We all own testing. We're a team. I'm talking about getting it deep into your DNA, where you're not just saying it. When you hit a wall in an Agile team and you're behind, the developers, I'll pick on developers, the developers pitch in and help the testers. Does that make sense to everyone? They help them test, and they don't do it. You don't hear language like, oh, I'm doing your job. Oh, I'll do it this time for you. Oh, you fell behind, so I'll help you out. You can pay me later. You can wash my car later as barter, as an exchange. It's not that. We're doing it willingly because we have the view that we're working as a team. We're truly working. It's in our DNA. And there's even this recognition that I'm not good at testing, so actually help me. Tell me what I should do. Yeah, this is your job, so let me help you, but tell me which ones. Give me some easy work to do, and you take the hard work because you know what you're doing, and I don't necessarily know what I'm doing, so help me out. So that whole team ownership of quality, knowing the right thing, having some healthy metrics, balanced metrics. I talked about a lot of some of these things in the workshop yesterday. And having a strategic balance across the pillars, so we're using the pillars as a way of creating our strategy. There's something I want to, I better mention it now because it'll get lost. Mary Thorne and I, my co-author, we developed an assessment tool, a three pillars assessment tool. If you go to my website, and I'm not selling you anything, but I gave you the book. If you like the book, there's a complimentary Excel assessment tool behind it that really helps explain the pillars in more detail, that would help you assess where you're at. One of the goals for the pillars was to use it in a continuous improvement way and use it in your retrospectives, et cetera. So that tool is out there, and if you just register on the website for the mailing list, you'll get access to that tool if you want to. But it helps explain it, and it helps support sort of the hypothesis behind this thing of it's not just a book, it's not just a model. We're trying to make it breathable and livable and part of your continuous improvement organizationally as you improve on testing and quality practices. So let's drill into the foundations. I was just beating on whole team quality, and I mean that. To me, one of the measures I have for a mature Agile team is literally what I just said. I want to see developers willingly jumping in and testing with a smile on their face and a spring in their step. Yes, I'll help you. What can I do? What's your name, sir? What's your name? Reno, what can I do to help you? We're behind. It's the eighth day of a 10-day sprint. We're in Scrummerfall, baby. I know. We've been working on this code for 8 days. We're going to just dump it in your lap. I know I'm dumping it in your lap. I apologize for that. I know it's an onerous burden. What can I do to help? Look, I'm smiling. Even if it's no automation, forget automation. We have ugly manual test cases. And I have to run ugly manual. I'm still smiling with ugly manual test cases. I'm going to partner. I'll do what I can to partner with my team to meet the commitment we made to the sprint goal. Everyone with me? I'm not doing your job for you. I'm working as a team to help us meet the goal that we had, that we established together when we planned the sprint. And we're in this together, and I'm not going to move ahead. I'm not going to go to the next sprint until we get this sprint bedded down together. We're going to meet our goal together. That's that whole team ownership of quality, that whole team ownership of testing, that whole team ownership of getting it done. I hear so often, yesterday we were talking about Scrummerfall. How many people have heard that term? And one of the indicators of that is developers wanting to move ahead. Everyone with me? The minute we dump code in QA's lap in the middle of a sprint or towards the end of a sprint, we then want, every developer on the team wants to do what? Start the next sprint, independent of the testers. They want to move ahead. And again, I'm not picking on development, but you're putting the cart before the horse. Get the sprint done. Get it done as a team. Figure out how you do that. So that, and get it in your DNA. And oh, by the way, then recognize that manual testing sort of is the enemy to some degree. So the next sprint, maybe invest in some automation. And then the next sprint, plan your sprint differently so you're not dumping it in someone's lap on the eighth day. So we're figuring out a more balanced flow for the work in the team. And do that as a team. Knowing the right thing to build is a foundation, and then building it right. Where does the right thing to build come from? Anyone. The customer, in using Scrum terms, product owners, customers, that intimacy. Can testing play any part in helping guide a team to building the right thing? Anyone? No? Am I off track? I'm off track. Okay, forget. I buy that. No, anyone. Can we help the team and the customer to know what that we're building the right thing? Anyone in here?
Yeah.
I think that's an innate part of our role, not just the testing role, but pulling the customer in to the sprint, pulling them in to demos, pulling them in to look at user stories as they unfold, pulling them in, asking questions like the why. I was joking yesterday in the workshop. Why? Why are we doing this? How many of you have asked that in the last day or week? Continue that. She's like, I did it. Get that hand up. I did. I did it. Do more of that. So are we building the right thing? That's incredibly important in an agile context. You know, that's how actually one of the ways we go faster. That's avoid building the wrong things and try to build more of the right things. And then building it right from a definition of done perspective, from a quality practices perspective, from a domain requirements perspective, a regulatory perspective. Healthy agile-centric metrics. Think about those metrics. Anyone have any view? There's a key shift that has to happen from what I would call traditional waterfall metrics to agile metrics. Anyone have a... So I think of traditional waterfall as being silo-based. We measure dev. We measure QA. We measure BA. We measure DevOps. We measure the organizational functions during handoffs, very typically. There's a shift that has to happen in agile. That sort of vertical, that vertical measurement of silos has to shift in what direction? Anyone? Horizontally. And measure, the one key measure is measuring the team. Everyone with me? You're measuring aspects of the team. So no longer. Gone are the days where I care about test cases run per tester, per millisecond, per bathroom break, per day. I don't care about that. I'm not saying you can measure it. If you're interested in that, measure it at a team level. I'm going to think you're crazy, but I'll keep that to myself. It's like, go ahead and measure that. If it improves the team, that's fine. But from a leadership level, all I care about is what is coming out of the pipeline of that team. What is the quality of that output? What is getting produced? And is the team getting better and better and better, iteration over iteration, sprint over sprint, and producing better stuff? That's what I care about. I.e., are they working as a team? Are they collaborating as a team? So it's sort of shifting those metrics from, I'm not saying waterfall was unhealthy, but there's this shift to how can you go agile? How can we transform to an agile mindset if we're still measuring silos? If we're reinforcing dev versus QA, we have to make that horizontal shift. We have to look at team throughput. Steering is another foundation. Having rules. I see so many teams, the client I was talking about earlier, they had no rules. So some people use Cucumber, some people were using other middle tier test tools. They had no naming conventions. They had no templates. They had no guidelines. They literally had 100 teams, and every team was doing it differently. If God helped someone, if they moved from team to team, they would be disrupted. Things were different from team to team. There was no consistency whatsoever. And that was under the banner of we're agile. So, i.e., under agile, we get to do whatever the heck we want to do. And it's this incredibly, you know, chaotic environment. And I think that's okay if you're in your garage. If I have one team of three people in a garage, they can be as crazy as they want to be. That's okay. It's just three of them in a garage. How much damage can they do? But if I have 100 teams in an enterprise, consistency might matter. Standards, lightweight standards, agile appropriate standards, but standards nonetheless might matter. So some of that. And then the strategic balance. And the notion of continuous improvement and recalibration. And how do you drive? The pillars can drive that recalibration. It gives you a model that you can then drive to, that you can assess to, that you can drive to. You can look at, hey, next quarter we're going to be improving in these areas. We're going to connect them across the pillars. Everyone with me? Foundations. There's some underlying foundational elements to the three pillars that I think are really important. I want to just do a deep dive real quickly into each one of the pillars. I want to check my time. I'm running a little short. This is the technology pillar, as I said. There's a neat agile automation strategy that Mike Cohn coined quite a few years ago. He called it the agile test automation strategy. He talks in terms of three tiers of automation. Unit test is the bottom of the pyramid. So investing in unit tests at the base of the pyramid. The majority of our automation investment is at a unit test level. The majority of the focus there is from developers. How many people have heard this? You've heard, this is incredibly good. So everyone needs to leave here and go. I've done a blog post about it. Do a Google, the Agile test automation pyramid. Go find it as a strategy. I don't care what tools you plug into it, but it's an incredibly effective strategy for developing automation. And so that the unit tests are the baseline. That's most of our automation efforts are in unit tests. Most of that effort is by development. Most of that is, if they can't do it, or if they're reluctant, tough, maybe we do some training for them, but we're going to invest. Maybe 50% of our automation effort is at that base of the pyramid in unit tests. Above that is everything below the UI. So go to the unit test level and then come right below a UI. If you don't have a UI, then stay up there. And that is the, what I would call middle tier tests. That's the land of cucumber. That's the land of fitness. That's the land of these middle tier tests. And you want to invest maybe 30 or 40% of your automation efforts there. Then you want to invest just a minor part of your effort into that sort of that tip of the pyramid, which I would call UI-centric tests. Selenium, from an open source perspective, is often used up there. So using some open source tools, Selenium at the top of the pyramid, Cucumber in the middle, NUnit, if you're as a platform for unit tests, all of those together is your strategy. No longer is it just a UI-centric strategy. It's a combined strategy across those things. SOAP, or any APIs would fall into the middle tier from my point of view as well. Anything that you can do below the brittleness of the UI is part of that strategy. That's an incredibly sound strategy. It's been around for over 10 years in concept. Folks have repeatedly made use of it. I've made use of it as an internal leader 3 times in 3 different companies, and it rocks. And still, we're not talking about it enough. So that's, and the company that I was talking about was all in on Cucumber, and they were all out on TDD. Everyone understand what I mean? So I'm picking on them even further. They were all in on Cucumber, and they couldn't spell, so they not only couldn't spell a user story, but they couldn't spell a unit test to save their life. So they were even imbalanced in the technology pillar from that point of view, and I wanted them to start raising the bar from a unit test. Not overnight, it's gonna take time. But please, defocus some Cucumber, refocus some TDD, maybe play around with some Selenium in later sprints, but sort of create a balance in there. Continuous integration beyond the automation is not just looking at this technology pillar from an automation perspective, but now I want you all to be aware of CI, continuous integration, continuous deployment tools. That's where your automation gets wired. That's where it gets invoked. So you have to care about it. You may not develop it. You may not code it. But from a strategic perspective, you need to care about it. You need to bring it as part of your automation strategy, I think. That would include data. That would include virtualization. So test data, all of that thing. It's a box that you want to care about. The ALM tools are part of that. Dashboards are part of that. Actively practicing ATDD and BDD. I want to go on record. Agile teams. So I talked earlier about this team that was running amok from a technology point of view. I've seen equivalent Agile teams that are out of balance from a manual testing point of view, that they're investing nothing in automation, like zero. And they asked me yesterday, I got some questions from folks, what do you do if the product owners don't buy automation? And I jokingly said, I think shoot them or something like that, or flatten their tires in the parking lot. No, but today, as part of the Agile transformation, I want everyone to leave here. Automation is part of the play, everyone with me. It's not 100%. It's a balanced automation strategy. Zero is not the answer. You can start at zero, but I don't want to hear zero. Like, if we have a conversation 2 years from now, and it's still zero, I would leave your company. I don't want to work there as an agile coach. It needs to be part of our strategy for testing, for speed, for nimbleness, for feedback. That's what I'm looking for automation. It's not the technology. It's the feedback that it provides to the team, that quick, instantaneous feedback. Did we break something? If we broke it, we fix it. Everyone with me, pillar one. Pillar two is that software testing thing. Don't forget that. So now forget all that automation crap, all that technology crap for a second. Throw that up back to the left side of your brain. Risk-based testing. Everyone know what I mean by risk-based testing? How many people think that we test everything? Who's testing 100% of their apps all the time here? Who's testing? Please don't raise your hand. Please don't make me jump down off of this stage and talk to you. So no one is doing it. So if we're not doing 100% testing, we're doing risk-based testing. Everyone, we're all doing risk-based testing. We may have a system to apply to it. We may not. Rex Black, books. Go buy the gentleman's books if you want techniques and approaches for approaching risk-based testing. That's it. That's an old-fashioned viable technique. Is it viable in Agile? I think yes. Agile, iterative-based development, is a risk-based testing play. So we want to bring functional and non-functional risk-based testing approaches into our sprints. When we're planning a sprint, please don't have just story-centric testing in your sprints. Does anyone know what I'm trying to say? A lot of Agile teams, they look at the testing world in a sprint, I'm just testing the story, and then another story, and then another story, and another story. What have you tested this sprint? 10 stories. I'm like, what about the surrounding area? What about the app around that? What about regression? Have you done any partial regression? No, we tested what came in. What came in was stories. We functionally tested the stories thoroughly. I'm like, well, did you break anything that you implemented in a previous sprint? Did you break any automation that you had implemented in a previous sprint? You have the responsibility as an Agile team not to clean your room and to make sure it stays clean over time, that the stuff that worked in sprint 2 continues to work in sprint 3 and sprint 4 and sprint 5. And I don't think story at a time thinking attacks that. That's part of the proposition, but it's too simplistic. I was ranting a little bit yesterday about planning. So many Agile teams don't do planning. They throw out plans. I don't want traditional plans. I've got scars on my back from doing 200, 300 page test plans as part of a process before, and no one read those plans. And I verified that no one read those plans, but I had to do the work as a test leader. I'm not talking about that style of planning, but I'm talking about wikis. I'm talking about putting words on a wiki page and getting the entire team together and saying, what is our testing strategy for this sprint, for the body of work that we're going to attack? Not just story level, but product level, release level, performance, functional and non-functional. How are we going to attack it as a team? And if the answer comes back, you know what, we don't have enough testers on the team to properly test the results that we're planning for, then what I would say is drop a few stories so that you have the capacity to create a balanced body of work that's fully tested, that's production ready, that you would be proud of delivering. Because that's the job, sprint over sprint over sprint. If you read the Scrum, there's this potentially, the fine print in Scrum is potentially shippable product increment. Everyone with me? That's what the goal is. Potentially shippable means we could ship it. It is as fully tested and completely tested, we're as proud of it as we could be. Maybe we didn't run a full regression, but we came darn close. We came as close as we wanted to as a team, and we mitigated the risk for that iterative deliverable. That's the goal here in this. We want to do that. Exploratory testing, I don't have the time to explain it, but what I would emphasize is I think exploratory testing is, if you know what it is or if you don't, please, if you're in an Agile environment, investigate in exploratory testing and then look for ways to integrate it into your Agile iterations. It's a wonderful complementary technique. When I think of testing in Agile, I think of manual testing, and I don't try to take that to zero. I'm not afraid of doing some manual testing. And I think of automation investment, and I think of, in the middle of that, exploratory testing is this wonderful way to get teams collaborating. When I say exploratory testing, I mean pair-based, session-based exploratory testing, where pairs are working together. And I've gotten such traction out of that in Agile context, not just with the testing, but with the collaboration it drives. We talk about level setting, the respect between testers and developers. There's no better way to get that than to pair together. I'm going to say that again. There's no better way to get that than to pair together. If you're a tester in an Agile team, and if you want to know if you're connecting to your developers, look for them to pull you in to pair with them during unit test development. Even if you can't spell the language that they're programming in, you can add value in that. So you know you're starting to chip the surface to get this equality, to get this balance, to get this value collaboration, to get to this Agile mindset when they're asked, come over here, I want you to pair with me for a half an hour. I'm doing some unit tests. Look over my shoulder. Tell me, I know you don't understand PHP. I know you don't understand Java, But you can help me. You can read, and we can work together on this to design some effective unit tests. Not only are you going to help the developer, but you're going to get insights and confidence in what they're doing, what they're not doing. You can ask them, where's my question? You can ask, good, why are you doing that? Why did you not do that? There can be this wonderful collaboration and pairing. And then that's what I'm talking about, a balance. I think in this, so in each pillar, you want to balance across the pillars, but you also want wonderful balance within them. And in this case, it's a balance between manual and exploratory and automation. And I don't want to go to zero in any of those cases. I don't care how advanced we are. I want that collaboration. This last pillar is that soft space. Everyone with me? The soft stuff. What is that expression? The soft stuff is the hard stuff sometimes. It's the hard thing. It's the collaboration. Programming is easy compared to dealing with people. I still wish that people were programmable and I could program interactions as a programmer. It would make the world a Bob place, not a better place, but at least I could orient to the world. So team-based pairing, I'm talking about that. Stop-the-line mindset. Anyone, what do I mean by a stop-the-line mindset? I want to establish the courage of anyone on the team to be able to raise their hand and stop it. For what? Give me a case of stop-the-line. What would be an example of stop-the-line mindset? Give me something more. I agree with you. This is not. Give me, what is this? Give me a, this story is not good. This feature is not useful. This story is not ready for the sprint. We have not cooked it enough. Give me another one. Anyone? The build, I was looking for that. You said, yes, the build, the obvious. Continuous integration and continuous deployment is based on the lean mindset of stop the line. And it's not just, what happens right after you stop the line? There's an extension point. So just stopping it isn't good enough. You have to extend it, fix it, the build. So, and everyone, we've just stopped. I mean, in a true XP sense, in a true agile sense, when we stop, if the build is broken, I like to block the entire team. I know that sounds scary to a lot of folks. I'm not saying everyone has to fix it, but I want a sense of urgency that we are blocked. We have a problem, and I want a sense of urgency from a team's perspective to say, we need to fix that problem as a team. Now, of course, the person who broke the build in that example should be a part of that effort to fix the build, but they may need help. And it's all, get the team to swarm around that and figure that out and get it cleaned up fast. That's that stop them. So it's not just stop the line. Have the courage to identify a fault, do root cause, fix that, and then move on and fix it. Not to let those things accrue. Oh, we don't know how to write. So the organization I was talking about, we don't know how to write a user story. Cool. Let's write another one. We write crappy user stories. Cool. Let's write another one. 1,000 user stories later, we still suck at it. Let's write some more of these things. I'm like, I wish someone in the entire organization, they had hundreds of people, they needed just one courageous little voice to say, excuse me, we don't know how to do this. And we suck at it. Maybe we could get better. I mean, why don't we stop just producing crap? Maybe we can figure out what are we doing? But no one did that. No one had that stop-the-line mindset. Active doneness, aggressive refactoring of technical debt, getting that technical debt, test debt. So it's not just development debt, it's test debt. It could be scripts, it could be your test repository. I don't care what it is. It's things to get, are we investing in ourselves? Are we investing in cleaning up our automation? Are we investing in our practices? It's that investment, cleaning up things from a technical debt perspective, getting them in backlogs. And then something that's really important is this use from a user stories, the three amigos. I was talking about it in the class yesterday. Let me do a time check. I think I'm good. And we're talking about the three amigos. The three amigos is a model put forth by George Dinwiddie. He's a coach in the Washington, D.C. area. And he talks about the three amigos being a tester or testers, a developer or developers, and the product owner. And they talk and converse around user stories, both in grooming and refinement. But as that story executes to the point where that story gets signed off as done, so when that story gets first picked up in a sprint, the amigos meet around it. They don't have a grandiose meeting. It's just that little triumvirate talks about questions, talks about clarification, talks about, do we have enough information in the story? Are the acceptance criteria clear? Do we know how we're going to design it? Do I know when I'm going to peel something off and give it to you to test? What's the strategy for implementing this story? Are we going to be swarming around it? Are we going to collaborate? It's a powwow around that to get it done. And then they might show it to each other 2-3 times a day. The amigos work on it. The amigos work on it. Then they go back. They talk, and then they go back and do their jobs, and then they come together. Are we in sync until that story gets done? It's tight collaboration. That model is used in refinement, backlog grooming, but it also travels into the sprints themselves. And then what do I mean by active? Does everyone know what I mean by doneness? Definition of done or doneness? No? Someone help me. I know there's a doneness out in the audience. But what is the definition of done? It's a little list of criteria that when I'm in a sprint and I say, I hold this story up and I say, we are done with this as a team. It is the checklist that we've adhered to in order to complete that story. It could have inspections. It could have code reviews, design reviews. It could have test activities as part of it. It is our list of things that we consistently go through on a story-by-story basis, consistently as a team. It's our rules of the road. It's our constraints for developing work. It seeps into our estimates. It seeps into our plans. It seeps into everything we do. It has governance items. So it's not just what the team wants. Very often it has organizational constraints, governance constraints, quality constraints. It's the contract or the agreement between the product owner and the team, that when the team says done, 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 the team, I've released 10 stories to you at the end of a sprint, the product owner doesn't even check. They have confidence that the team understands their definition of done and has delivered all 10 stories to meet all of that criteria. I could double check a little bit, but I trust my team because we've had this clarity. We have this organizational clarity. When I say active doneness, what I mean is you have deep and broad definitions of criteria, and it gets into the team's DNA to the point where they would never ever think of violating their definition of done. I see so many teams that at the end of a sprint, it's like, Bob, we're 99% done with this. So, you know, we only have 2 more bugs. Our definition of done is a story cannot have any bugs that were created in the sprint. So in our definition of done is thou shalt not really, you're not done until you've cleaned up the mess that we made as part of our youthful enthusiasm to develop the story. Okay, cool. So that's part of doneness. Friday afternoon, about 4 p.m., you know, team members come into the coach's office. Bob, we're almost there. We have 3 more bugs to fix. Can we get special permission so we can carry that into the next sprint? The answer is no. And now, do we fire them? No. We don't penalize them. We don't take their firstborn child. I just expect them to learn from it. The next time you realize the rules of the game are, there's no partial credit. We have done this, and we will meet that. That will carry over into the next sprint, but that's a bad thing. So that's in your retrospective. Let's figure out how we prevent that from happening. Let's figure out some prevention. So organizational quality strategy tips. Continuously communicate your vision. One of the aspects of the 3 pillars, it's a vision model for you as well. I want you to start using it with your executives. So to me, the pillars are not necessarily for individual testers. They're for test leads, they're for managers, they're for directors. It's an organizational strategy model from my point of view. And the vision we have for it is it's the communication mechanism we have for communicating outward of how are we doing. So things like your strategy must be shared. And always consider the amigos, not just at a team level amigo, but I would argue that there's organizational amigos, where you could have your director of development and your director of QA and your director of product, and they need to be working together in sync as amigos, driving the strategy down into the teams. The teams cannot independently, from my point of view, successfully create a high impact, high value, high delivery transformation, agile transformation by themselves. We need organizational alignment, and the pillars are helping with that. So keep working your strategy across the pillars. Make it visible with information radiators. So radiate stuff, put stuff on walls, the quintessential burn down charts, or anything you can, make it visible. Make the pillars, make your focus points, make your progress quarter over quarter, month over month, make everything as visible as you can be. It's not, don't just put it on a wiki. Visibly print things out and put them on your walls. Visualize organizational impediments, the things that are keeping you from quality. Visualize them as well. If your development leadership isn't supporting quality initiatives, That's an organizational impediment. They need to be tied. They need to be focusing on quality as much as the quality leadership team or the test leadership team. They need to be in sync. They need to be emphasizing the same thing when they're coaching their developers, that collaboration and quality is important. It's a team function, not just a QA function, not just a tester function. And then quarterly readouts. So key goals of the three pillars. Mary, my partner, my co-author, and I'm a pointy-headed coach nowadays. So I've not had a corporate job for a few years. I've been coaching for about 3 years. Mary is a director of QA in an e-commerce company. So she has, she does some of the stuff part-time, but she has a day job. She's in the real world. I try to be there, but she's in the real world all the time. And one of the challenges she has is she gets challenged by her leadership all the time. It's like, Mary, what does good look like? You're yammering about quality. You're yammering about agile quality. You're yammering about agile. But what the heck does it look like? And she uses the pillars in organization, in her own organization and in other organizations to talk about what does good look like and where are we going? So what are aspects of good? Yesterday in my workshop, people were saying, there's too much crappy agile in the world, Bob. How do we move it towards higher quality agility, to higher impact agility, to more mature agility, to more responsible agility? And these are some of the aspects, a whole team view, build the right thing, definition of done and readiness, tackling technical debt, not just saying it, but fighting the good fight, getting it into backlogs, making the business case for it. It's not going to happen if you don't push for it. Just enough, just in time mindset, continuous improvement, commitment to agility, even when the going is hard. I met a team not that long ago, or an organization, where out of 100 teams, 50 of the teams, so half the teams, stopped doing retrospectives. They just threw it out because it really, from their point of view, it wasn't worth it. It was sort of, we weren't getting the bang for the buck out of it. It was sort of boring. We really don't care about retrospectives. And I was heartbroken about it. Like, you're throwing out the key activity for continuous improvement. Maybe the meetings, they were boring. Well, then fix the meetings. Don't throw out the ceremony. Don't throw out your commitment to continuous improvement. Even when the going is hard, we have a distributed team. So it's really going to be hard for us to get the right time to get the people in the room to have a retrospective. Well, I would say tough. Figure it out. Commit to agility. Think about what you're throwing. Collaboration. Commit to collaboration. Commit to continuous improvement. It's worth it. And then you wonder why you're not getting the agile results. Well, you're not investing. You're not investing in it. You're taking the easy way. Context-based testing, three amigos, feedback, feedback, feedback. There's tremendous feedback loops there. That's the key thing for automation. It's a technology play, but don't get caught up in the technology. It's a feedback play. The key value proposition for automation is real-time feedback. And then not just that, adjusting based on the feedback. That's the point. What are we going to do? We have feedback. Something is broken. Now the key activity is, let's adjust. Let's change our direction. Let's pivot. When? Now. We have new information. So the key takeaway for the three pillars, and you have the book, please scan it. Not trying to sell you anything, but we've gotten great traction out of it. And I think it's a model that might help you in your journey, in your Agile Journeys organization, is balance within the pillars, balance across the pillars, across the foundational elements with the pillars, and then across the organization. Don't lose sight of the fact this is not just a team-based model. We have to engage leadership. We have to engage the organization to have an effective transformation. You can't be in it alone. So we have to glue ourselves up vertically in the organization. It's a multi-tier play, leading towards broad incremental organizational quality and testing strategies. It's that simple. And do something. So don't just focus in one area. Focus. Do a little bit less here and a little bit more here. So three pillars of agile quality and testing. Thank you. Contact information for me. You have the book. And I think I've run right up against the time. So I will be around all day if anyone has any questions. But like I said, it was my honor to talk to you guys. I hope you got something out of this keynote this morning. I hope you have some nuggets. Even if you're in Waterfall, please take. I hope you took something away. Whether you're in Waterfall, Agile, moving from Waterfall to Agile, hybrid, I don't care. I hope I left a little bit of an impression on you, and I want to thank you for the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of STP Radio. Join our mailing list and learn more about STP and future STPCon events at softwaretestprofessionals.com.